Hi everyone, it's Amanda. Melissa is on vacation this week, so it is just me sitting down with our great, amazing friend, Brandy. She is entering our timeline and she will be sharing her origin story. And boy, is it a doozy. You won't want to miss this episode.
Faith can feel like hearts and butterflies until someone lights a match and burns it all to the ground. Welcome to the Burning Butterflies podcast.
The sad thing is that there's abuse of every kind within the church, but the spiritual abuse is the stuff that just
A place there shouldn't be abuse. Like, there just shouldn't be abuse in a place that claims Jesus.
Well, and it ruins your soul. If you're new here, we suggest listening to our prologue episode first. This is the story of two women's journey through spiritual abuse and escaping from toxic church culture while finding hope in Christ.
Sometimes it's just the facts, and if you get offended by it, that's a you issue. And if we can't be mature enough to have these conversations, even if some of the topics are difficult, then shame on us.
Okay, so welcome back. We are so excited because now Brandy has officially entered the chat. Brandy has entered the timeline and we are going to hear her origin story today. So Brandy, why don't you just start off with where you grew up and how you grew up?
So weird that Melissa and I grew up about 15, 20 miles from each other. And then we both ended up at Come As You Are, which is kind of crazy because that's a very small town that is not like a destination place to move really
no.
at this point in time.
No one is moving to our tiny agriculture community in northern Colorado.
Yeah. So Melissa was towards the beach. I am in northern Orange County behind the Orange Curtain. So it is a very conservative, there's still a lot of money, but you don't have like the hippies that moved to the beach communities in the 70s and 80s. This is very conservative, a lot of stay-at-home moms, just it looked the same as it did in the 50s and 60s, which people weren't really there then. People from LA moved into Orange County when it was just orange groves. So there was the Orange Curtain. So we did not go into LA and LA did not come into us. It was also called a sundown town. You would not want to be in Orange County when the sun started going down if you were not white. So I was always raised in this kind of us versus them mentality. But of course, anyone you talk to would say like, oh no, we're not racist. We love everybody.
But then you I don't talk. See color.
Yeah. But like my grandma would make comments like, well, those Mexicans, you know, they just have a way with planting your flowers and cleaning your house. You know, they really, you know, that's what they are. They just do a good job. So, nothing was really malicious. It was just, you didn't know any better.
Well, it's that old generation that they didn't realize. They thought they were being kind by giving a compliment, and they didn't realize that, like, no, grandma, that's racist.
Yes. And my mom was the same way. Everyone made racist comments when I was growing up, and mostly towards the Hispanic community. And what's funny is it was so white. There was hard. I mean, the people came to clean the houses and stuff like that, but they didn't live by us. So anyways, I went to private school. There is no money issues in my family. I know there's money, but I don't really have a concept of it. But I also am aware that everybody in my family talks about how broke they are. everybody is broke. It's like a, almost like a badge of honor. I don't know. It's very weird, but like,
yeah,
you'd hear things like, oh, I just paid cash for an $80,000 car. But then in the next sentence, they'd be like, yeah, we're so broke. I don't know. It's just weird. But because you knew they weren't really broke, but I think it was the way of like being humble. I don't know.
Yeah.
So growing up like this, I very much was like, once I got out into the world more, I didn't understand why people had money problems, because I would, in my brain, I'm like, well, what is wrong with you? Something's wrong with you if you don't have any money. And this is the land of when you graduate high school, the girls are getting nose jobs and boob jobs for graduation presents. And for graduation, I went on a week-long trip to Puerto Vallarta with six of my friends. And I didn't like save up for it. It just was expected. And then I think I got like $1,800 in cash given to me for the trip, which in 1993 for an 18-year-old, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's a
no concept.
Yeah, that's a crazy amount of cash. Yeah.
It was an all-inclusive place. I mean, we went to out to the clubs and stuff, so you had to, you know, pay for stuff there, but you're in Mexico. And I came home with $0 and nothing to show for it. So I graduate, and my family all went to USC, but by the time I'm graduating, LA and where USC is located is not a good area. So I end up going to Cal State Fullerton, which is very close to where my parents live. It's a decent school, but I mean, it's nothing to get excited about. My husband always gets mad when I say that because they have a good baseball team. So I don't even know where the sports stuff was. I never went over there, but I can tell you where front row is, but... so I get to college and I'm still surrounded by people that are just like me. And a lot of people from my high school, surrounding high schools, all go to school here. And no one has to work. Everybody's just going to school. And so I think I worked part-time. My family had their own business. So sometimes I worked there, sometimes I didn't. And I got away with it because I got good grades and I was, quote unquote, a good girl. Little did they know that when I got there, we are drinking Boone's Farm and we start doing coke. Because it is 1993, so we're still doing that. So during the week, I go to my classes. I do what I'm supposed to do. I don't really go out on the weeknights. I go out, though, every weekend, and we party like there's no tomorrow. And
like
so,
it's 1999.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I don't really have to try hard to do anything. Like, I get good grades. I'm just kind of skating through. I've been told by my dad that I should be looking for a husband at school, somebody that is going to make a lot of money, because I don't want to have to work. Why would you want to have a career? You need to. And I take his word as gospel during this time in my life. So I just keep going to school, and I end up staying in college for like 5 years because I don't know what I'm going to do. And I have a boyfriend, but he is someone I grew up with. And we started dating right after high school. And we're more friends than boyfriend and girlfriend. We're in the same friend group. My best friend is dating his best friend. So it's one of those things that's just like, it just works out really well. And we all like to do drugs together and party.
So it's easy.
Yeah. And we, you know, it's fun. he's spoiled too. So he has a truck and a boat. And we're very, very young at this point. So we're like, I don't even know if we were old enough to, maybe 20. And we're going out to Havasu and Laughlin. We have fake IDs. And we're out on the lake and river all day long. He has a boat. And we just, like, had no idea, like, these things are not easy to come by. His friend somehow gets involved with some people that are into the Grateful Dead. And so at this point in time, the Grateful Dead is still touring and summer tours. And there was this across the United States, but in a lot of like coastal areas, like all the way up to Oregon, Washington, there's a huge amount of people that are, you know, 18 to 25 that start going to Grateful Dead concerts. And so the first one we go to is in LA at the Rose Bowl. And we get there and, you know, the Grateful Dead is all about LSD and mushrooms and whatever. And so we took LSD. No thought about it, just take it. And it's fine. It agrees with me. I have no problem. We have a great time. And I now decide, because I don't know, I have ADHD at this point in time, but whatever works out in the moment, that is going to be my new thing. And I am going in full force. So now
you got a huge dopamine boost from the Grateful Dead and LSD. Yeah.
So we're going to chase people.
That. Yeah.
Because you have the parking lot culture. So it is a whole community within itself. And you go into that parking lot and everyone is happy. Everyone is nice. Everyone is sharing whatever you need. There's not a bad vibe. It's just the greatest thing ever. And then you add drugs to it that make you feel good. So then you're like, this is nirvana. This is how America should be. So then I decide I'm going to go on tour with the Grateful Dead. So that summer, we go from Orange County all the way up to Washington following the Dead. And because we are spoiled children, the only way we're, because I mean, that's a lot of gas, staying places. And of course, we're staying in hotels. We're not like staying on the side of the road camping like most deadheads would be doing. And we have money for drugs and food and everything else. So we go all the way up to Washington, spend the summer doing that.
Did your parents know that? Wait, that's what you were doing?
No, we would say like we are going camping. Well, this is the other thing too, is so the parents aren't like super like concerned about what we're doing. So most of my friends, and including myself, you have more than one house. So we have our house in Orange County, but then we have a house in at Lake Havasu. And so my boyfriend's parents had a house up in Big Bear in the mountains. So everybody has like multiple properties, like a house in Palm Springs. So we would, and we didn't go on like continuous tour where like we left in June and came back in October. Like we would go and come back, go and come back. And so, we would say like, oh, we're going to go to Big Bear and we're going to go up there for like 4 days. And then we'd drive up to, you know, Northern California. So they didn't really check. We were technically adults and nothing was happening to where they would be concerned. They had no idea what we were doing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we would go out to Death Valley and party in the middle of the desert. And like, we are so lucky we're alive. Like, we got to Joshua Tree, which is now a thing again. And they have these huge boulders out there and you're hiking around on LSD. It's just insane. So they really had no idea what we were doing. And since we, like, our life looked normal, like, no one realized, like, how much drugs we were taking and whatever. Yeah. So we do that for a couple of years. But then, I mean, we don't go up that far after the first time. We mainly just go like Central California. Because really, you're just going for the parking lot and the drugs by this point. So, but like the drugs, I can do drugs and then the next day be like, I'm never doing that again, and then not do it for 5 days. Like, it's like binge taking drugs. And I drank too, but alcohol never really, like, I just didn't like alcohol. It made me feel terrible. But not that I ever stopped drinking. I still would. But I always preferred drugs over alcohol. So now I don't even know. Well, we finally, so like we graduate college. My boyfriend at the time, he goes to work at an architect firm. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to be a teacher because I don't know what else I'm going to do. So I'll just do that. So now our parents know each other, they're friends, but they're not like constantly in communication. They're like, all right, you guys got to figure out something. What are you doing? Cause at this point in time, we've been together like probably 5 years and we talk about getting married and all of our friends are starting to get married. And I always wondered why I didn't like push for like a wedding and whatever. But now I'm like, cause it was too much admin. Like I couldn't like put it together.
Yeah. So were you getting like pressure, like, because did your parents know like you were living together? So because you mentioned like you grew up super conservative. Like,
yeah. So at this point in time, I'm still technically living at home. So my parents fine that I'm never home because they can, because it's all about how it looks on the outside. So I'm never home. And so my best friend lives two doors down from me. And she's doing the same thing. She's never home. We're always together. They know we're sleeping at our boyfriend's houses. But because they can say we still live there and we just pretend like it's not happening. And then the same thing is going on at the boyfriend's houses where they know we're spending the night and whatever, but they're just pretending like it's the, oh, you just fell asleep watching a movie. You know, it's all just, you know, just stupid looking back. So then it's decided, well, because he gets a good job. So it's like, all right, you guys, you know, you got to be adults now. Like, you got to pay your own way. Because, like, I'm not paying for anything. I have a gas card. I have a credit card. And I have access to money. Like, I don't have to worry about anything. He was working part-time and had to, you know, take care of things more himself because he's a man, but I did not. So then his mom and dad decide, like, okay, you guys got to get a house. Well, of course, we can't afford Orange County, so we have to go out to the Inland Empire, which if you're from Orange County, we're 714 area code. You don't want to move out to the 909. It's like a whole thing. And even to this day, when I would move to another state and people would say they were from California, I'd be like, oh, where? They wouldn't want to say they're from Riverside or whatever. Now I think it's gotten better. It's basically, it just keeps spreading and you got to go out further because there's no more houses. So we end up buying a house in Chino, which used to be like where the cows and stuff were, very agriculture, it smelled. And so they change it to where this new like subdivision area, they call it Chino Hills. Cause if you put hills on it, it's now fine. So we moved to Chino Hills, not Chino. And we buy a house together. We talk about getting married. Well, actually, him and I don't even really talk about getting married. But everyone else, and including myself, I talk about it like it's going to happen one day. And so we move into the house together. And I'm not even thinking like my name should be on the house and like anything like that. And our parents are both thinking too, like, you know, they both dated young and they got married young. So like, you know, it's kind of just that boomer mentality of you date someone, marry them, whatever. So there's, and I mean, that's even how my like friends and stuff were. So it's just kind of assumed eventually we'll do it. So we live in the house for about 6 months and well, and of course, like my mom takes me and buys me whatever I want for the house. His mom takes me and buys me whatever I want for the house. I get whatever I want for everything in the house, like bedding, everything. And 6 months we're living there and I start to know like something is not okay. And he's staying after work and going out for drinks with the boys and all the stuff. So I know he's cheating, but I'm just like, I've got to hold all this together because now we have a house. And that's like my whole thing is like, we have a house. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And so I don't even remember what it was, but it was back with like the catalogs. My dad's company, I don't even remember exactly. He used to get points every Christmas for like the volume of paper they bought. And so we'd get to get this catalog, like a Spiegel catalog. I don't even know if you're old enough to remember that. and we'd get to pick stuff, basically. And so, like, I remember sitting there in the morning looking at it going, oh, we should pick this. We should pick this. And he goes, I don't want to do this anymore. And I'm like, what? And so he's like, I don't want to do this anymore. You need to move out or something along those lines. And so I'm very black and white. So I'm like, what? What? You know, freaking out and losing my crap as I'm starting to take my crap down. And so he leaves. And so I basically pack up all of my stuff within like 10 hours. I do not call my family. I call my best friend and I tell her what I'm doing and she's not fazed by it at all. And then I do have a friend that is also living out there. So I call her and I say, I'm coming to your house. So I have the entire house packed of all my stuff in like 10 hours of that happening. And so I go over to my friend's. On the way to my friend's, I call my mom and I say, I'm moving out. We are not together anymore. We are done. And I say, and I have my dog that I've had since I was like 14. So I'm like, and I have Cubby with me. So I go to my friend's house and I'm like, and you know, her husband is super good friends with my ex. And so like, I'm like, I know he's cheating. Da, 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 da. And it's one of those things. No one will say whatever. I don't know who knew and who didn't, but I was consumed with that for a while because I have to know. And there's no social media, no way I can, to this day, I've never seen the girl. And so I go back to my parents' house and I think this is like on a Sunday, maybe a Saturday. So I go to my parents, stay the night. The next day, my dad takes me back out to the house. We grab my stuff and he is like, we are only taking what we can fit in my truck. So I do not take any furniture. I do not take, like, I am petty as hell. So I wanted to take the mayonnaise out of the refrigerator. I was going to take everything. Like, I was going to leave him, like, a napkin, and that was it. And my dad is like, put it away. And so I only take my clothes. I didn't even take the bedding. Like, I took very little. And the reason my dad's logic was my cousin had a huge wedding. And I can't remember how long the marriage lasted, but it wasn't very long. And then it ended up costing my uncle like $50,000 for the divorce. And so my dad's logic was there's not enough money in this house to cover that. You're not married. We can buy all this stuff again. Get your crap and let's go. And so finally I was like, all right. So I just took my stuff, went back to my parents. And never, to this day, I've never spoken to him again. Like, I took my dog and I left. And so And then, because I can very much just, when I'm done, I'm done. So you are no longer a thought. And so, because I moved back to Orange County, and a lot of my friends, they're already married. They either have a kid. Because at this point now, I think I'm 26. So a lot of my friends are married. They're on, like, their first kid. They're buying houses. So now I'm single. And so a year before that, my friend, which she won't, Sarah, she's not going to care if I say her name. She had broken up with her boyfriend that was my ex's BFF. And now she's with another guy. And he's older. So she's moving down by where Melissa lives. And it's just far enough away that we start to lose touch. Plus, she's pregnant and I'm back at my parents' house, whatever. So now I'm like, great. I have no social circle because everyone's like married. And then everyone was friends with both of us for a long time. So now it's the, you know, whose side are you going to pick?
Yeah.
Type of thing. And a lot of it, because he coupled up, I mean, he married this girl within 2 months of us breaking up. So then it was easier to be friends with them than me. Because
oh, so he married the chick that he cheated on you with?
Yeah, I forgot that part. Yeah. Two months after, you know, and his parents were very supportive of me too, because when I left, I went over there like a day or two later and they were just like, I don't know what he's doing. This is wrong. So like they were totally on my side too. But then when I was done, I just was done. So I never talked to anyone again. So yeah, he marries her. So I go back to Orange County and I'm like, okay, time to reinvent what I am doing here. So I am no longer part Grateful Dead, nothing. I don't want to be married now. I don't want to have a house. I don't want to do any of that stuff. My brother says, let's go to Havasu for Thanksgiving. So I'm like, okay. So my mom and dad end up saying, okay, yeah, we're going to go out there too. So we go out to Havasu, and I've been living like kind of in a different world, so I've forgotten what it's like. So we get out there, and my brother's 2 years younger than me. And so we're there for just like maybe a couple hours, and he's like, Dennis is going to come pick us up on his dad's boat, and we're going to go over to the other side. So the London Bridge is there, so we're on one side, they're on the other side. So you have to, like, take a boat. So I'm like, okay. And so we go over there. I think we were on the boat for part of the – I don't even know. But we end up over at Dennis's house on that side of the lake, and his parents are not there. And, I mean, we're all adults. Like, everyone's in their mid-20s by this point. But they're a couple years behind, so no one's married. They're still partying hard and whatever. And so I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. This is just what I need. No responsibility. Let's just have a really good time. And they all – so this is a whole different kind of group of friends that – I mean, they're all raised – we all went to the same high school, so we're all raised pretty much the same, except for this group of guys did not go to college. They either had family business, so like my brother just fell into the family business, and then these guys also the same type of thing, where it's either family business, and then one of my brother's really close friends, he started doing flooring, and a lot of the guys started doing it. Well, because of, like, how I am, of course, I'm like, you're doing flooring. You're going to have a flooring company. That's what – and this is going to sound so terrible, but whatever. Everyone knows. That's what Mexicans do. Why are you going to do that?
Yeah, because that's what was normal for you.
Right. And so I don't know that there's a ton of money to be made in this. And so Jason's there, who is my husband now, and we have always flirted throughout the years. I've known him since he played soccer with my brother when they're like 5 years old, and he's a twin. So when they were really little, we were like, oh, the cute little Clark twins. And then as we got older, when we were in high school, we'd be at parties together and we'd flirt and joke around and whatever. But he was 2 years younger than me. So I was always like, yeah, that's not going to work. But now we go over there and I mean, I've seen him off and on throughout the years. And so we're all hanging out and whatever. And we end up, everyone left and I can't even remember the name of the place that's there, but they all went to the bar and Jason and I did not. So after that, then we're together. And I put no thought into this at all. Like, I'm just always just going along.
Living in the moment.
Yeah. And so I call. Okay, so what year is this? So this is like 2000, 2001 maybe. So we have like Nokia cell phones. So I call my friend Sarah and I tell her, I'm like, oh my God, you're not going to believe this. And she's like, little Clark. Oh my gosh. Because Jason also has a brother that is my age. And so we laugh about it. I think it's funny because she knows I always flirt around, because when we'd be at parties and she'd be like, there's your little boyfriend. And, you know, it had been a joke for years. And so we go back to Orange County and I'm like, okay, that's over, done, whatever. That's what I'm thinking. And I'm kind of like in my head about it, like, he's young. I was supposed to be getting my crap together. I'm still not getting my crap together. And he ends up calling and says, if I want to go out to dinner. And so, well, and to back this up a little bit, my ex and I never went out to dinner. We never did anything because all of our money was spent on alcohol and drugs and cigarettes. We never went out to dinner because we would make the choice of we're going to do that instead. And plus, it was always all of our friends together because we were together younger. So it's kind of how it's like almost like a group dating situation.
Yeah.
So, like, we never did that. And so he calls, says, let's go out to dinner, whatever. So we go out to dinner, and then he's living at his friend's house. Well, and he, my brother goes, because, like, I know him, but, like, I don't really know him at this point beyond just, like, joking around and whatever. So I say that we're going to go out to dinner, whatever. And my mom's like, what? And Beefy's like, oh, wait until you see his truck. And in my head, I'm like, a truck? Why would that's whatever. Because so, I had no idea that, like, you know, because he had an F-350 diesel, which, you know, you don't see a lot of those in Orange County. And so I mean, I still wasn't impressed when I saw it because it's like a construction truck. So, but that was one of the main things I remember. I was supposed to be impressed by this truck.
So, like you said, Beefy, Beefy is your brother, but his name is not Beefy.
Yeah. So we call him Beefy and everyone knows him as Beefy for his whole entire life. He's been Beef or Beefy, but his name is Brian. But Jason's older brother is also Brian too. So he's always Beefy. Even my kids call him Uncle Beef.
I was going to say my kids call him Uncle Beef. Yeah, my kids call him Uncle Beefy.
So, yes. So we go out to dinner and then we go back to where he's living. Well, the kid, I call him the kid that he's living with is living on a private golf course. And we pull up and I'm like, holy crap. Like, he's got this huge brand new build house on like this golf course that's like $100,000 a year membership. And so I'm like, dang, what are you guys doing? Well, they all were doing flooring. And so we pull up and everyone has one of these trucks. So I'm like, oh, maybe the trucks are a thing. I don't know. And so we get there, and so everyone is kind of weird because it's like beefy sisters here. Like, we've all partied together in like party situations, but now it's like weird because the dynamic's off. And so we all start drinking whatever, and then the ice is broken, and everyone's just, you know, making jokes about it, whatever. And so then, you know,
well, they're in this big, beautiful house. I can only assume if there's just a bunch of dudes living there, like there's little furniture, like they have liquor bottles.
Yeah,
on
there's
top
no
of
furniture. There's, you walk in and it looks like an empty new construction. So there's a couch, because like there's a front room, you walk in, there's nothing. Probably empty beer boxes. And then you walk in the other room, there's a giant TV that porn is always playing on loop. There's a huge stereo system, huge speakers. The music is always blaring. A couch and a glass pimped out dining room table. So imagine swingers, because this is like the swingers era. So all they do is work and party. And so we hang out for a few weeks, very, very short amount of time. And because I don't think anything through. So then all of a sudden, I'm just kind of living there.
It's just easier not to go home and deal with your parents.
And it's just, yeah. And then I don't have to deal with anything that's happened. I just am like, on to the next. None of that happened. I don't really talk to any of those people that I was friends with before. And we just are like, now I'm doing this. And so I didn't realize, like, I'd always heard some things that Jason was involved with, but I always kind of was like, oh yeah, whatever. They're just trying to be tough and cool and whatever. Well, as I'm living at this house, some people start to come over. And this is before everyone had like a lot of tattoos. And even at this point, well, and that's one of the things too, is the next morning in Havasu when I wake up and I see Jason's back has like a tattoo down the spine, and I think he had something on his neck and he had like his shoulder tattooed. I was like, what the heck did I do? He's got tattoos. He's got one down his spine, one on his neck and his shoulder. His whole shoulder is tattooed. What did I do? Because it's not a thing yet to where everyone...
No, it's not socially acceptable. Like, if you have a tattoo, you are in a gang or you're in jail or, like, yes, you're just kind of, like, on the fringes of society at this point in time.
Yes. And the only... Like, my dad has a tiny heart, but he got it when he was in the service, you know, so yeah, those kind of, you never like, see it, never see
like the guys it. With the anchor because they were in the Navy and
yes, and it's tiny. This is like full on, and I just remember being like, oh my gosh, like my parents, what are everyone gonna think?
And in the fits of passion, you didn't notice the tattoos.
Yes. So then people start to come over to party and whatever. There's like, you know, kind of the same kind of tattoos as Jason. And then some other people start coming and there's some neck tattoos, some full sleeves, whatever. And some girls start coming around and they're like, you know, wearing combat boots and purple hair. Sorry, Melissa. And they have tattoos too, piercings, you know, just a whole different scene. And so a lot of people he knows are in bands. And so we start going, and I can't even remember the places we went to. But we start going to like these, I mean, I don't even know if club's the word, but they're not like a dance club. They're not playing, you know, Snoop and any of that. Yeah. Like, this, like, it's punk, but it's like hardcore punk. And so we start going to these things, and then there's more and more people, and there's this whole community that they're part of. that I'm just like, oh, wow, I did not realize. But I'm also drawn to it, one, because it's a forbidden community, and I am also liking what they say in certain things about, like, they want to provide for their wives. They want to provide for their kids. Very nostalgia, very much the 1950s were amazing. And now, because of, like, TikTok, it's really the first trad wife type of situation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the start of that movement, yeah.
Yes, and like the Patriots. And if there's going to be another Civil War, we are going to have our weapons ready. Thank God there's no social media at this time. So, and it's... there's a lot of it around. And so, everyone's kind of involved in it. And then I come to find out that there's a higher level of involvement. There's like tiers to it, which it's basically like an MLM, which any kind of high controlled situation is. And for some reason, when I see these tiers in anything, I am like, please sign me up so I can work super hard to get to the top tier. So I'm like, all in at one point. And what they realized, I believe now, is like, I didn't want to have purple hair or whatever. So there's another group that are more, like rockabilly was big at this time. So they like the pinup girl style, mm-hmm. Betty Page. So this is the male gaze punk scene girls. So these girls are wearing 1950s housewife dresses in heels and red lipstick, and it's that whole culture. So of course I like that look, so I'm like, oh yes, this is great. And so, and I think, yeah, because I had Betty Page bangs. So it's a mixture of rockabilly, punk rock, and I don't even know what to call it. But so we become, he's already super involved in this. It sold to me in a way that it is not bad. It is good. They are protecting. They are here to protect people because we have let things go in the United States. And so you got to realize I'm coming off the Grateful Dead where we love everybody. Everybody's welcome. Let's party and have a good time.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what your background is, what your culture is.
Yes.
We're doing it.
So at first, I argue, of course, when things are brought up and said. I argue with the men because the women aren't saying anything. And so very quickly, I realized that I cannot hold my own against these people. And it is because, well, and eventually when at Come As You Are, people can't hold their own against me because I'm well-versed in it as well. So it's just, you've repeated it and it's been said to you so many times that you wholeheartedly believe what you are doing is for the greater good.
Yep.
So I am hanging out with some wives. They have tons of kids. No one is having like 1 to 2 kids. They're having like 5 or more kids. And these wives are like, we love it. It's amazing. My husband takes care of everything. I don't have to worry about anything. It's just the greatest thing ever. Well, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I can't figure it out. I can't organize my life. I can't do anything. And I don't want to go work for my dad. So I'm like, perfect. Jason is going to take care of everything and I don't have to worry about anything. Sign me up. So I give over basically all of my control at this point. And so we get kind of deeply involved in this. And then I start to realize that there's like a mob quality to what is happening. And at our house, we had like a little courtyard. So we're in a condo And this one was built in like the 60s. So we actually had, you walked in, there was like a courtyard area that you could sit, have a table. Then you went in the house and then there was like a little tiny patio. But I mean, for California, it's a pretty decent size, like backyard, but there's no grass, only concrete. And so people would be over at our house all the time. And we had a pool, like a community pool that we would all go to. And so we're all hanging out. And the first time I noticed all the men went out into the courtyard. And I walked out there just thinking like they're, you know, whatever. And I walked out there and it just went silent. And I started talking whatever. And Jason was like, you have to go inside. And so, of course, I'm like, what? I need to hear this. Like, what are you talking about? And I can't, of course, I cannot let it go. And so I'm like, okay, whatever. So I go back inside. And we're all drinking. So, of course, I'm not like, oh, okay, I'll go inside. I have to be mouthy, say a whole bunch of crap to everyone before I go inside. So then I'm like, whatever, you guys are stupid anyways. I go inside. And so later on, I'm like, what the hell was that? What are you guys talking about? And he's like, you don't want to know. You can't know. And so eventually he says something to me that kind of stops me in my tracks. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so then I'm like, crap, what the hell are you involved in? So, of course, I'm like, oh, well, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. So I just ignore it because everything I equate has to do with like, he's involved with this, but he has a good job. He's making decent money. So that cancels out anything else. It's fine.
Yeah. And he's taking you out to dinner. He's not cheating.
He's taking me out
to
dinner. He's taking care of everything. So my ex charged $10,000 on my credit card, my dad's credit card. And so I am freaking out. And this is at the very, very beginning because my dad is going to kill me. And so, because he was cash advancing like $300 at a time to go buy an 8-ball. So huge charges, huge interest, just a mess. Well, Jason pays it off like it's nothing. And so I'm like, holy crap. Like he's a winner.
Yeah.
And so he's taking care of everything. I don't have to worry about anything. The only thing I'm doing is I'm working. I don't even think I was working full time. And I am buying groceries and I don't think I made dinner every night, but I would make dinner on like Saturday when all his friends were there, whatever. We would barbecue chicken and I'd make like salad, whatever. The wives would bring crap over. We'd all cook together. And that seriously was like my jam. Like that was like, this is what I want. So I'm like, everything's fine. It doesn't matter. Well, then like this goes on for a couple years and I start seeing more and more things where I'm like, crap, I don't know if I want my, like, if we're going to get married and have kids, I don't think I want my kids around this stuff. Like this is kind of gnarly. And like my friend Sarah, like she and her husband would come around every once in a while, but then she'd be like, we can't be around this. And so, and I'm at this point, I am so immersed in it. I'm like, it's fine. It's not what you think it is. It's fine. It's fine. And so, and this is the thing. It's tied to gangs. And so a lot of people are in and out of prison. And at this point in time, every Saturday night, the sheriffs are knocking on our door and the sheriffs are watching us. And, you know, well, so there's all these.
I just want to be clear really quick, because like, I'm sure our listener is like, you're being very vague. Well, we're being vague for a reason, because the people that you guys were involved with, still exist. And the stuff you're talking about is still active today. And so we're being vague for a reason, and whatever you are comfortable sharing, that is what you're going to share. And we're not going to go anywhere beyond that.
Right. It's like the mafia. Once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. One of my first experiences, too, that I forgot about when he's living with his friend, the cops come and we're upstairs and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. The sheriffs come in and they zip tie everybody in the house, put them against the wall. They're like, whose trucks are those out there? And that's where the truck thing comes in, because the cops question, like, why are there like six of these trucks outside? And I mean, the trucks are lifted, have, you know, every bell and whistle on them.
Which, where I come from, is normal.
Right.
Like, that's a very normal thing in the Midwest culture. But you're in
Orange California. County, where, like, yeah. You get a BMW or a Mercedes. And yeah. So, and then this house, and then they come in, and everyone's, like, 25 years old. This huge house, and there's no furniture. There's beer everywhere. So it looks like we're selling drugs. So the cops come in and everyone's downstairs partying. So when the cops come and everyone, but it's like late. So like whatever girls and stuff were there are gone. So it's mainly just the guys that were living there and like friends that were there every weekend and would just stay the weekend, basically get zip tied, handcuffed and put against the wall. And so Jason goes downstairs to see what's going on. And I hear them talking, whatever. And I'm like, I am not going down there. And so there, I can hear the cops or anyone else live in this house, whatever. And so they're like, we're sent, and they brought dogs in. So the dogs are in the house and I can hear the dogs. But in my mind, I'm like, they're going to know like who we are. They're going to be like, sorry, we came in your house like this. Well, they say, you need to come downstairs, ma'am. If you're upstairs, come downstairs. Well, I ignore the police. Because they are not talking to me. How could you be talking to me? So they say it again. And Jason is, no one's saying a word. The guys are not saying a word. They know the drill. You shut up, sit down, and you don't say a word. So what had happened was his friend and his twin brother had been out. I think it was, I don't know, but driving around in one of the trucks, and it was a new construction subdivision. And so they had drank like a bottle of Jack Daniels and then went and off-roaded the truck, and one of the tires came off, and then they drove the truck home with no tire on it, sparking and wasted, the radio blaring. And so someone called the cops. So Jason finally yells, they're gonna really send the dogs up if you don't come downstairs. And this is the very beginning. So I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And that the cops are coming all the time. So I go downstairs and they see me and they're like, this doesn't match up. So they don't handcuff me. They take me into the kitchen. They ask for my ID. They run my ID. Nothing comes up. So one of the cops sits down and he's like, what are you doing in this house? These guys are going to get you in trouble. This is a bad scene. You don't want to be part of this. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm not saying this, but I'm like, you're stupid. You don't know what you're doing. Whatever. So his friend is so good. He says, the cops are questioning whatever, and the cop goes, there's a truck out there. There's no tire on it. We know you're doing this. And the guy goes, what? And he's wasted. He goes, what? Which truck? The green one? It doesn't have a tire? Like, he plays this off so well. Like, I'm like, holy crap, give this guy an Oscar. So everyone's questioned, whatever. Cops can't figure anything out. There's no drugs in the house. And so they
Because
leave.
This group is not doing drugs.
Right.
They
oh,
are,
yeah, drugs are evil, evil. Yeah. No one does drugs.
You can drink a crap ton, but we are not doing drugs.
We are not doing drugs because the scum of the earth do the drugs, not us. So, yeah, I'm not doing drugs anymore. I don't talk about it. I'm talking about the Grateful Dead, nothing. And some people know whatever, but, like, it's just not talked about. So, that was the first time. And then there's many other times where I like get pulled over. And so it basically what happens is once the cops are aware something's going on, they check tattoos and they document it and put you in gang file. So we got pulled over. I seriously was taking them bowling. I wasn't drinking. They wanted to go bowling. So I was taking Jason and his friends bowling. And the sheriff followed us out. I don't even know what I did wrong, but it was something like you normally wouldn't get pulled over for. They pulled me over because they know I have all these guys in my car. And so they pull us over on like a super busy street and everyone has to get out of the car and they have to take off their shirts. And if they have leg tattoos, they have to take off their pants. So they're sitting on the curb, shirtless, whatever. So they're looking at tattoos to see who they belong to. And so at this point, I'm like, what the heck is this? This is a violation of our rights. So they completely search my car. They can't find anything because there's nothing. And so then they pull me aside and they run me and they're like, you have an expired driver's license. And I'm like, yeah. And because I just let that happen because the admin's a lot to go get a new license. And so they questioned me, tried to get me to admit something, mention all these different groups of people. And I have no idea what they're talking about. And so they questioned me for like 45 minutes. And I am just like, I have no idea. And they're like, why are you with these guys? You don't belong with these guys, whatever. And so, so then I'm like, we get back in the car, whatever. And I'm like, you guys are all stupid idiots, whatever. I don't even know if anyone got tickets, whatever. I got a ticket for expired driver's license, but they're like, don't worry, we'll pay for it for you, whatever. So I didn't have to pay for it. Cause at the time I think it was like $250. So.
Which is a lot at that point in time.
Yeah. Yeah. So they pay for it because they're glad that I was driving and no one else. Because, like, if you're on parole, you can't be around people that are doing mm-hmm. these things. Go back in. And so I think I take them bowling. And then later on, Jason says to me, that's why you can't know anything because you couldn't answer any of their questions. And I was like, oh, okay. And so this just slowly becomes the normal. The sheriff's department constantly at the door and wives waiting for their husbands to get out of prison becomes the norm. And as time goes on, like at the beginning, it was kind of like, I mean, I'm sure I was getting dopamine off of like, holy crap, how can this stuff be going on? And like the excitement of it. But then you start to see the like how horrible that life really is. And like kids don't know who their dad is. And it's just really, really bad. And so Jason has a friend that left what was called a scene. Basically, he left the scene and went up to Oregon. And a lot of these people are going up to Idaho and Oregon at this point in time. And Jason's like, well, let's go fly out and see them. And I don't really know these people. Like, I went to high school with them, but like my brother wasn't, they're younger than me. So my brother wasn't friends with them. And then his wife was probably like a freshman when I was a senior. So I really didn't know her. Like, I know of them, but don't really know them. So we go up to Oregon to visit. And they have this huge, nice house that they pay like $200,000 for with a huge backyard. And so Jason's like, oh my gosh, this is unreal. And, you know, because in Orange County, even at that time, you're looking at like $500,000 or $600,000 for that. And so, and this is the, you know, early 2000s still where things aren't completely outrageous yet. So we go up there and we're like, this is great. This is great. And so at this point, Jason and I, neither one of us know we have ADHD.
You're both chasing the dopamine.
Yeah. So, and Jason's like a backyard. Like to us, this is like if we were getting like 450,000 acres, it's like a normal size backyard. And all Jason wants to do is mow the grass. And so, this house is like, I'm like, holy crap, this is a huge house in a nice subdivision, and it's all quiet there and just completely different. So we're there for 2 days and we decide, of course we should move to Oregon and buy a house. So we don't look into anything job-wise, nothing. His friend is also doing flooring, but he's working for another guy. So Jason is like, well, screw him. I have my contractor's license. I'll move here and we're going to start our own company. So then I always need something that is, I am all in and can put all of my energy into. So now we are no longer part of this other situation. We are going to be business owners.
We were a deadhead. Then we were part of this really controlling group. Now we are business owners.
Yes.
Burning Butterflies is a listener-supported podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by our amazing supporters on Patreon.
Follow the link in our show notes to learn how you can become a Patreon supporter too. Supporters get exclusive access to bonus content each month, including outtakes, cut content, and supporter-only episodes. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating on your listening platform.
Burning Butterflies is a production of Asha Media. Thank you for listening.